And now, children, we'll begin today's lesson. Open your books to page 36 and read the... Matthew Alexander Henson, will you pay attention, young man? I don't know what you'll ever amount to, the way you sit at your desk with your mind 1,000 miles away. Off at the North Pole, for all I know.
This is Inheritance. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with the American Legion, presents another story woven from that wonderful fabric of dreams, ideas, and achievements that make up the tapestry of America's past.
My teacher said North Pole, and it sounded so fantastic that my classmates took it to be the biggest joke in the world. I was 13 years old and an orphan, and going to school was just one of the things I didn't like about living with my uncle in Washington, D.C. I wanted to learn about life, people, places, but not in a stuffy classroom. So I ran away to Baltimore. It was easy. The year was 1879. Nobody paid any attention to a homeless little colored boy wandering aimlessly along the pier. That is, nobody except a weather-beaten sea captain with smiling eyes and a gruff voice.
Ahoy there. Looking for somebody?
No, sir. Just looking at the boats and all.
These are ships, lad. Not boats.
Oh. They sure are all fired pretty. And this one here, it's got 1, 2, 3 sails.
She's the Katie Hines, finest three-master in Baltimore.
She's yours?
Well, I'm her skipper, Captain Jonas Childs, at your service. And who might you be?
Matthew Henson, sir. I came here from Washington. I want to be a sailor.
Do you now? What do your folks say about it?
I've got no folks to speak of. My mother died when I was a baby. When my father died, I went to live with my uncle.
Oh. You've run afoul some mighty rough weather for a youngster. Think you'd like to go to sea, eh?
Oh, yes, sir. I know I would. Do you think maybe... What I mean is, if I could go to sea and had my druthers, well, I sure'd pick the Katie Hines.
Like the cut of her jib, do you?
Yep, and her skipper, too.
By Jupiter, you sure got away with you, lad. Maybe I could... No, that wouldn't work. Well, you can't be more than a minute past 12 years old.
I'm 13 going
on
14.
It's no good. Company regulations say crew members have to be 15. Even a cabin boy.
Cabin boy?
Well, it's worth a try. Come on, Matt.
Where are we going?
To the company office. You just keep your mouth shut and your chest poked out. Maybe kind of scrawny, but from now on, you're 15 years old.
The Katie Hines was the first real home I had, and Captain Childs became the only family I knew or cared about. The captain was stern as a father, gentle as a mother, patient as a teacher. He taught me to read, to write, and to navigate. And to think. Every afternoon I would go to his cabin for my lessons. But one day, something happened below deck, and I was late.
You're late, Matt?
Yes, sir.
Now, where were we last time? Oh, yes, navigation. Recall our voyage to Madagascar last year, Matt? We sailed across the equator. That was 0 degrees latitude, an imaginary line circling the Earth like a belt. 90 degrees north of it is the North Pole.
What's at the North Pole?
No man's ever been there, lad.
I wish I was there. Anywhere but on this old ship.
Why, what's wrong, Matt? Never seen you act this way before. Come on now, speak up. We've been shipmates for 2 years now. Getting tired of studying? Want to call it quits?
Why not? What good's an education going to do me? Might as well toss all these books overboard.
Hold on there. I can't cram an education into you if you don't want it. But you better tell me what's eating at you.
I... I just had a run-in with one of the men. It wasn't my fault, honest. I tried to explain, but he gave me the back of his hand.
What? The devil, you say? Who was it? So help me, I'll have him in irons as fast that he...
No, he didn't hurt me, Captain. Not when he hit me anyway. But then he called me names. Said I was no good because I was colored.
God, the stupid fool.
Listen, Matt. I try to run a good ship, and I hope that nothing like that would happen to you aboard the Katie Hines. But I'd been steering you wrong if I told you it would never happen again. You see, lad, there are people in this world who judge a man by the color of his skin.
I'll fight him. When I get bigger, I'll fight him back. That's what I'll do.
Aye, but not with your fists, Matt. You can't beat intelligence into a man's head. Now, remember that.
Then how?
By doing your job, whatever it is, the best you know how. And never be ashamed of what you are. A man who is proud of himself is bound to win the respect of others.
It doesn't sound easy.
No voyage is ever easy, Matt. And that's what life is. You can drift with the tide, or you can sail ahead with topgallants up and ensigns flying straight into port. So set your sights on the stars and keep a true course come hail or high water. That's the way, Matt. That's the way. Now, let's get on with the lesson.
Captain Childs taught me more than how to mend a sail, plot a course. He taught me to be a man. For 5 happy years, I served under him. When he died aboard the Katie Hines, I quit the sea for good. I returned to Washington and went to work as a stock clerk at a menswear shop. One day, I was in the back, taking inventory, when Mr. Wilson, the owner, called out.
Matt, bring out one of those sun helmets, size 7 3/8.
7 3/8, right. There you are, Mr. Wilson.
Thanks. Just a minute, Matt.
Yes?
This is Lieutenant Robert Peary. Mm. He's an important man in the Navy. This is the young fellow I was telling you about, Lieutenant.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, I need someone to go with me to Central America as a valet. Keep my clothes and quarters clean. Must be honest with regular habits. Mr. Wilson here recommends you.
I see.
May I have a look at that helmet?
Of course, sir. The mirror is right over there. Now, Matt, it isn't that we want to lose you. Why, I was just telling the lieutenant how well you've done in the 18 months you've been with us.
Well, I appreciate that, Mr. Wilson. I don't want to seem ungrateful, but... I got my fill of being a servant when I worked for that cranky old man up in New York.
But this sounds like an opportunity you shouldn't pass up. Who knows what the job will lead to?
I don't know.
I'll take the hat. Well, Henson, do you want the job?
Maybe if I knew more about it.
Well, I'm going to finish up a survey job for a proposed canal in Nicaragua.
Nicaragua? Mm-hmm. Well, I've been there.
Oh, so much the better. Now, the French have already started the canal through Panama, but we're certain our project will prove more advantageous because we plan to use Lake Nicaragua.
Well, as I recall, that lake cuts halfway across the country.
Why, yes.
I'm a seaman by trade, sir.
Oh, I see. I had no idea. Henson, I would like for you to come along.
And I think I'd like the job.
Well, then it's settled. I'm leaving tomorrow, but I'll let you know where to join me.
It seemed the letter from Lieutenant Peary would never come. But at last, in the spring of 1887, I joined a man who was to be my friend and associate for the next 23 years. My job? Well, I was hired as Peary's manservant, but that lasted only 3 months. And as we worked together, the tall man with the keen eyes and shaggy mustache gave me more responsibility. After 7 months in Nicaragua, the canal project was abandoned. We returned to the United States, and I worked in the same office with Lieutenant Peary at the League Island Navy Yard in Philadelphia. From our very first meeting, I had sensed there was some strange secret locked inside Peary. But a whole year was to pass before I learned what it was. One morning, when I arrived at work...
Oh, Matt, would you come in here a moment, please? Matt, there's something on my mind.
Well, to tell you the truth, Lieutenant, I sort of guessed that.
Well, it's something that's been with me for 2 years now, ever since I made a trip to Greenland. My companion and I traveled 120 miles into that frozen waste before we were turned back by a blizzard. I promised myself then that someday I would return and become the first man to cross Greenland.
But wasn't there a man from Norway?
That's right. Nansen of Norway got there first. I've been going over the observations he made last year, and I've been reading everything about the Arctic I could get my hands on. Now I've got private sponsors to outfit an expedition, and here in my pocket is an 18-month leave from the Navy.
You're going back to Greenland?
Exactly. I plan to explore the northern reaches of Greenland, set foot where no man has ever been. And the reason I'm telling you all this, Matt, giving you this background, is because I want you to come along with me.
But I'm no scientist. What would I do on a trip like that?
And I guarantee there'll be plenty of work for you. You'll help me build sledges, hunt food, drive dog teams. But I think that you have the courage and resourcefulness it takes to survive in the North. I need a good man like you, Matt. And there's one thing more. Once we reach the frozen ice fields of Greenland, the real goal, the answer to all my dreams, will lie ahead.
The real goal, sir?
Yes, the North Pole. Someday, Matt, I shall stand there, 90 degrees north latitude, at the top of the world.
I had complete faith in Peary, but the newspapers predicted disaster for the Greenland expedition, and the general public was not alone in its skepticism. I was clearing Lieutenant Peary's office to make way for his replacement.
Hello, I'm Lieutenant Sanders. You must be Henson. I'm taking over Peary's office.
Come on in, Lieutenant. I'll be through here in a jiffy.
Take your time. Now, they tell me you're going along with Peary.
That's right.
Don't you know a Negro can't survive in that bitter cold climate?
I'll make out all right.
I think it's criminal of Peary not to recognize a simple scientific fact.
What fact, sir?
Everybody knows that a dark skin is adapted for tropical climates. You should stay here in the South where you belong.
I think I belong with the man I work for, Lieutenant. Besides, they tell me that Eskimos are as brown as I am. They live in the Arctic.
Have it your own way, then. But nobody expects any of you to return alive. If you come back without any toes or fingers frozen off, I'll give you $100 cash.
That's a lot of money, Lieutenant Sanders.
Well, it'll be waiting for you, and if you get back to claim it, I'll guarantee it's the hardest $100 you ever earned.
Ice, snow, driving winds, sub-zero temperatures. That was the Arctic. It was so big, so seemingly endless, a vast sea that rose and fell and split open to swallow men and dogs. And yet, there was a strange fascination about it that was to draw me back again and again. We made a triumphal return, even though we had barely penetrated Greenland, and I collected my $100 bet. It was on the expedition of 1898 that Lieutenant Peary became a victim of the North he was trying to conquer. An explorer named Otto Sverdrup was close behind us. We suspected that he was heading for Fort Conger, the spot where Greely and his party met their tragic end. Conger was to be our northern base, and to prevent Sverdrup from getting there first, Lieutenant Peary ordered us forward, even though it was the worst part of the winter. Lieutenant, how far do you figure Conger is from here?
It's about 2 miles due west, Matt. I think the dogs have caught their breath now. We'd better push on, Matt.
All right. I'll have an igloo harness them up. Are your feet all right?
Yes. I was just beating them together to stir up the circulation.
You better let me warm them against my stomach.
No, they'll be all right.
All right, I need Lou. I'll see what he wants. Then we'll shove off.
How are the Eskimos holding up?
So far, so good.
They haven't been seeing that ice devil of theirs, have they?
No, Kikoya is kept out of sight so far.
Hey! You come quick!
What is it, Anidlu?
Two dogs! We've locked up!
Two more dead. That means we'll have to ditch the big sledge. Harness the dogs to the small one.
Yes, my... Billy Swok, he sick too?
No, Anidlu. He'll be all right as soon as we get to Fort Conger. Come, we go now.
Yes, my...
There's the fort, Matt. Thank God the building is still standing.
Here. Let me help you inside.
Oh. Maybe my feet did get a little frostbitten.
We'll see in a minute. Just lean on me.
Yeah.
There. Anidlu. Make fire and stove. Kaka. Hurry up. Just a little farther, Lieutenant.
Mm.
Here's a cot. Easy now. I'd better look at your feet. I'm afraid I'll have to cut your comics off. They're frozen to your legs.
Is anything there? I can't feel a thing.
That's bad. Can you move your toes?
I don't think so.
Anidlu.
No.
Get a bucket. Fill it with snow.
Yes, my Billy Swok, he's sick man.
Here we go now. Easy. Easy. Good Lord. Your toes. They snapped off like dry twigs. Why didn't you tell me your feet were frozen?
There's no time to pamper sick men on the trail. Besides, when I reach the pole, it'll be worth the few toes I've lost.
We'll reach the pole, all right. But not this year. We've got to get back to the ship, where there's a doctor.
All right, then we'll try again next year. And the year after that, if necessary.
You'll be lucky if gangrene doesn't set in and you lose more than your toes, sir. I'm sure the doctor will have to amputate.
Just so he leaves me enough to stand on when I get to the pole, Matt. That's all I ask.
The loss of his toes did not stop Barry. If anything, the handicap made him even more determined. On New Year's Day, 1900, Peary and I, and a small party of Eskimos, had no time to greet the new century. We were sledging across the sea of ice of Smith Sound to Prayer Harbor. By May 14th, we had reached 83 degrees 50 minutes north, 400 miles from the North Pole. But we failed. We tried again in 1902, then again and again in the years that followed. Sometimes we waited a year or more between expeditions while Lieutenant Peary tried to raise money to finance the next trip. It was during one of these waiting periods that I met a slim, dark-haired girl who was the most beautiful person I'd ever known. I remember the soft spring we strolled through the park, holding hands, talking. That is, Lucy was talking.
You're awfully quiet today, Matt.
I guess I'm too busy enjoying all this sunshine and flowers. This is sure one beautiful day.
From what you were saying the other evening, it's beautiful up in the Arctic, too. Although, for the life of me, I can't imagine how so much ice and snow could be considered beautiful.
I wish I could describe it as it really is, Lucy. The mountains of snow. Ice stretching as far as the eye can see. Sometimes the wind is like a roaring ocean. Then again, it is so still and quiet, doesn't seem real. Even when it's cruel and deadly, the North is beautiful.
And the Eskimo women? Are they beautiful, too?
Yes, they are. At least the Eskimo men think so.
And what do you think, Matt?
I'm afraid I don't have the words to tell you how I really feel about things. All I know is I've been around the world, to places where no man has ever set foot before. And this is the first time I've ever felt like this inside.
Oh?
Being a woman, I guess you know what I'm trying to say.
Yes, but a girl likes to hear it said, Matt.
I've got no right to ask you to marry me, Lucy.
Don't you want to?
Yes, I do. Only there's a job I have to finish before I can settle down.
I understand, Matt. And I'll marry you. Unless you're trying to back out of your proposal.
Well, suppose next year Lieutenant Peary makes another try for the pole.
Then you go with him, just as you've always done.
And, you? What will you do?
I don't know. The same thing Lieutenant Peary's wife does, I suppose. I'll just wait and hope and pray.
We made our sixth attempt in 1905, and that failure was more heartbreaking than any before. At 87 degrees 6 minutes north, Peary, now promoted to commander, gave the order to turn back. The pole was barely 175 miles away, but weakened by the long marches, our dogs either dead of exposure or butchered for food, it would have been suicide to continue. So we went home. In 1907, Lucy and I were married. But even then, Commander Peary was planning a seventh expedition. And on July 8, 1908, we sailed out of New York aboard a specially constructed ship, the Roosevelt. On the last day of February, 1909, our party huddled in an igloo, listening to Peary explain his plan.
Men, this is the last leg of our march to the pole. I'm positive we will make it this time. Not only have we learned from the mistakes of others who have tried and failed, but we have the benefit of all the experience Matt and I have gained in 18 years here in the Arctic. I have the best dogs available, the most experienced Eskimos. And in you men, Bartlett, Burrup, Marvin, Dr. Goodsell, Macmillan, the best supporting party I have ever had. My only regret is that none of you will be with me on the final dash to the pole.
Well, we understood that from the beginning, Commander. Just the same, I'd give my right arm to be there at the finish.
Marvin, I'm relying on that good right arm of yours to help break trail for me. Now, each of you will head a party of Eskimos and alternate as trail breakers. Then, as you have completed 5 marches, you will return to our base.
I see. And by that time, you'll be within striking distance of the pole.
That's the plan. I'll have with me 4 of the sturdiest Eskimos and Matt here. I couldn't get along without him. Well, that's it. Good luck, gentlemen.
Never before had we made such fast time. And with each party taking its turn as trailbreaker, no one of us was overworked. Then one by one, the supporting parties turned back. First, Dr. Goodsell, then Macmillan, and all the others. Only Commander Peary and I remained, with our 4 indispensable Eskimos, Utah, Siglu, Igingwa, Oquia. It all sounded so much easier this time compared to the rugged marches we'd made in earlier years. But danger was always present. Once my sledge broke through the thin ice of a narrow lead, and I plunged down into the icy water. But Utah caught my collar of the fur jacket and pulled me to safety. Then, as if it were an everyday occurrence, he removed my wet boots, warm my chilled feet against his bare stomach. On we went, hacking, pulling, pushing our way through the ice, until at last, Utah and I reached the spot I estimated to be our destination. We stopped and built an igloo. Shortly afterward, Commander Peary arrived. I think this is it, sir.
Help me unpack my instruments, Matt.
We built a snow shield to protect him from the flying drift of surface snow. Then stood silently as he made his observations.
89 degrees, 59 minutes plus. The North Pole, at last.
I got out my camera, made photographs of the terrain, and of the Eskimos holding the flags we had with us. The flags of the Navy League, the Red Cross, the DAR, and Commander Peary's college fraternity. Then Peary handed me the American flag he carried next to his body.
Planted over there, Matt, at the North Pole.
I plunged the oak shaft deep into the ice of a high ridge, and we saluted the faded, tattered banner. The red and blue of it standing out like a rainbow against the white background of the Arctic wastes. Peary had reached his goal, and now I realized that all along it had been mine, too. In later years, I was to see many barriers crumble. But on April 7th, 1909, America to me was this spot at the top of the world, where there were no distinctions between white, Negro, Eskimo. I made my way down the icy ridge, fully aware that the journey back would perhaps be even more dangerous. But all that faded into nothing for the significance of our accomplishment. When I reached Commander Peary, whatever elation shone in his sunburned eyes was replaced by a glow of deep satisfaction. He took one last look at our brave little flag fluttering in the Arctic wind, then turned to me and said,
"Let's go home, Matt. Let's go home."
You have been listening to Inheritance, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with the American Legion. And now it's our privilege to hear from the president of the American Legion Auxiliary, Mrs. P.A. Laneson. Mrs. Laneson.
Next week's broadcast will conclude the Inheritance series, and I'm happy for this opportunity to thank the National Broadcasting Company on behalf of the American Legion Auxiliary for making possible these inspirational programs which have traced for us America's inheritance of freedom. There are key points in our history when it has been under fire, 1775, 1812, 1861, and 1898 are the dates we learn in our history books. But 1917, 1941, 1950 are the years which are closer to us. And I'm sure I speak for every American citizen when I say that we're proud that the cause of freedom has been defended gallantly in our own time. On April 19th, 180 years ago, the embattled farmer stood on the rude bridge that arched the flood and fired the shot heard round the world. The battles of Lexington and Concord were, however, only the first demonstrations of American courage. The American Legion is composed of veterans who in World War I, World War II, and the recent Korean War fought to preserve the inheritance of freedom which was gained by those early Americans and passed on to us. The 1 million members of the American Legion Auxiliary are, for most part, the mothers, wives, and daughters of these veterans. However, numbered also in our membership are those whose dear ones made the supreme sacrifice, those who received the following communication. He stands in the unbroken line of patriots who have dared to die that freedom might live and grow and increase its blessings. Freedom lives, and through it he lives, in a way that humbles the undertaking of most men. Truly our inheritance of freedom has in our own time been secured at supreme cost. Let us guard it carefully and cherish it, that freedom may ring for those generations of Americans who come after us.
Thank you, Mrs. Laneson. Next week, Inheritance will take you on another journey through the pages of American history. Today's story was written by Robert Lucas. Included in the cast were John Marriott as Henson, with John Larkin, Richard Hamilton, Guy Repp, Josh White Jr., Charles A. Webster, Gil Mack, Judith Parrish, and Rosetta Lenoir. This is Roger Bowman speaking. Inheritance was produced by William Welch and directed by Daniel Sutter. This has been an NBC Radio Network production. Enjoy variety entertainment on the Dennis Day Show, today over most NBC radio stations.